You're listening to Blue Collar CEO, the podcast that's all about helping you build a better, more profitable, and more sustainable home service business. Each week, we will cover a different topic that'll help you enable your company to move forward to success. And here's your host, Ryan Redding.
What is up, Blue Collar CEOs? It's Ryan. Great to be with you again. I hope things are going well for you. Things are happening. It's a good time of year. Lots of things in flux, but hope you're doing well. Today's episode, guys, I have been waiting for months. We're about to talk with one of the brightest minds, in my opinion, one of the brightest minds in the home services space that you've probably never heard of. This guy has taken a company from a 20-person company to currently just over 200 people in a span of a decade. They are doing incredible work. They think about problems in really unique and helpful ways. And we're going to see a small glimpse into what made Pascal the powerhouse of a company in little Northwest Arkansas that, again, has probably flown off your radar because they're not in California. They're not on the coast. Like, they're not doing all these PE things. Put on your thinking caps. Get ready to learn. Let's get going. All right, Charlie, I have been looking forward to this conversation. Basically for a couple months, I've been like, got to get Charlie on the show. I cannot believe that we got you. So I guess real quick, before we start hopping in, because this is going to be awesome, for the boys and girls at home who don't know who are you? What do you do?
Well, yeah. So my name is Charlie Boyce. I run a company in Northwest Arkansas called Pascal Air Plumbing Electric. Obviously, I'm a big fan of yours, so I appreciate you. Appreciate you having me on the show.
So, well, thank you, by the way. I didn't expect a compliment. I wasn't ready for that. So here's one of the things. I said this to you before we hit record. The reason I'm so flippin' excited that we're talking right now, it's because I kind of feel like what you're working on in Arkansas is one of the best kept secrets in the country. There's all these huge names on all the coast, like Phoenix has a lot of activity, but what you're doing is flipping impressive. For those who maybe have never heard of Pascal, kind of give us like maybe a 30,000 foot view of like the company, help people get an idea of what we're talking about here.
Yeah, no, happy to. Well, I'll zoom out a little bit further. So I was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You know, my grandfather started an HVAC company there in the early 60s that's now ran by my dad and my uncle. So they're a large company in Oklahoma. So I grew up in the business, in the trades, went to school over here at the University of Arkansas, played baseball here, decided to stay here. And then, you know, somehow found myself back into the family business of
family business, yeah.
HVAC, right? So, yeah, so Pascal's a company. I was in distribution whenever I was done with school. So Pascal was actually once a customer of mine. I ran a supply house, and
that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's how I got to know Pascal, right?
And
so
that's crazy.
I came to work here in 2010 under our old owner, and then I worked under him for 2 years, and then I bought him out in 2012. So. You know, really, we've just been, you know, at that time we were 15, 20 people. You know, today we're right at 200. So it's just been.
Okay. Whoa. Stop.
Yeah.
You just blew through that. You, when you joined Pascal in 2010 or 2012, I guess when you actually purchased it, you were 15, 20 people.
Yep. Correct.
And you're how many now?
At 200.
Well, you're insane.
Yeah, 200. It's been a lot of growth. So we do HVAC, we do plumbing, we do electrical, and really, I wish it was sexier than that, but it's just get in, go to work, get after it, and try to grow a business.
So you wish it was sexier than that, but I got to be honest, you run one of the sexiest, slickest operations I've seen. Like, I remember. I guess it was during the lockdowns ish. Like, it was in 2020. I went up and visited your shop, and it was, dude, it is impressive. Everything you do, like, it was awesome.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that. And I think, to your point, we work incredibly hard at what we do. And if you happen to be in the Northwest Arkansas, you might have heard of us. But other than that, we kind of fly under the radar, and we certainly are a little bit of a secret, which is not a bad thing for me.
No, sure. So I'm curious. So here's my deal. I feel like a lot of the big names and a lot of the big companies who everyone knows, right? People look at them like, oh man, that's so amazing. It's so inspirational, all these stories. But sometimes they are so grandiose and like so far removed from most people's day to day that it's impractical. But you literally have demonstrated that it's possible to scale from a relatively, I mean, 20 people isn't exactly a small company. Like, it's not tiny, right? They're smaller. But compared to where you are now, you've shown that you can demonstrate that scale. In your experience, like, what do you think are some of the factors that have helped you contribute to being able to scale at that capacity and at that rate?
Yeah, great question. Really, it's just been, I think, internal drive and want to, and you know, personal development. I think just kind of an intense desire to win. You know, there hasn't been a big grand plan or anything like that. It's just come in every day. Yeah, go to work. You know, so I'm a cliche machine. I got lots of them, but you know, find the right people, make sure you got the right people on the bus, make sure we're in the right seats. We're always kind of like just tweaking and trying to continually improve. And I really think like inside the company, we have a bunch of just guys and girls that like to win and really have bought into the process and just how to grind and get better, and just a bunch of blue collar people who like to get after it and win, to be honest with you.
Okay. So you said cliches though, but in reality, what you talked about, the people on the bus, the seats on the bus, those are like EOS terms too. Are you guys EOS?
No, I've read their books and I think they're great.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that's phenomenal. So yeah, it's really just been about getting the right people here and continually trying to get better and improve and just keep tweaking, really.
So what's interesting, when I hear you start describing it, a lot of it sounds very similar to other friends of mine who were like collegiate level or high performing athletes, right? This kind of competitive drive, this ability to like persevere when things get hard, you keep going, right? There's a grit. How much of what you're building do you think has to do with the fact that you kind of were in those really high competitive sports environments? Do you think that had any influence at all? Or
yeah, I think it had a lot of influence. You know, I think if I really kind of zoom out, growing up, just I knew two things, kind of baseball and HVAC. I mean, those were the two main things I was exposed to. So, you know, I think from my dad, I just learned work ethic and just how to go to work every day. And HVAC, that was kind of the widget that I knew.
Yeah, sure.
And then in baseball, just team sports, you know, I learned a lot in team sports. So what made us successful kind of in our athletic careers certainly translates very well into what we do today. So, you know, we win together, we lose together over there, and it's the same thing. It's the same thing here. It's just one big team sport for sure.
Yeah. I think team is the operative word, right? Not that there's nothing wrong with like guys who golf or do tennis, but there is a certain sense of people who know how to protect people on their team. They're accountable for the team's performance, right? It is a different sort of mindset. And like I wrestled, right? And the team is like loosely used. So it is very different, but people is a big deal. And I know people right now is a hot topic because you're talking about the importance of having the right people. A lot of people would say, I just can't find people. I can't hire them. Like I can't, you know, what's your take on the people you need? How do you attract them? How do you retain them? Like how do you think about that?
Yeah. I mean, we deal with the challenges like everybody else. I try to avoid the word like extremes of we can't or always or never, or I bet you probably can. You know, I view it as an opportunity. You know, really, I think now we've kind of become like this employer of choice, but we weren't always like that. You know, when we first started, there were bigger companies, larger companies, or maybe had some of the better employees. And I think today we just kind of went to work and said, hey, let's really focus on like, what do our people want? So I would say one big reason we're successful is we model the business around what our customers want. And we model the business around what our internal customers or employees, right? Team members, what they want. So my whole goal is just to make sure customers are happy and make sure internal people, internal customers are happy. And so we just kind of model the business around what's best for our employees, what's best for our customers. And as long as, you know, employees and customers are both happy, then we kind of keep growing. And so, you know, I guess to answer your question, is it easy to find people? Not necessarily, but if you get this really good culture kind of going, and it takes a little bit, but I think with where we're at in Northwest Arkansas, it's kind of become this little bit of a flywheel that's rolling, and it's a lot easier to find people today than what it was for us, you know, 8 or 10 years ago when we were just kind of getting started.
Yeah. And I think, it's everything you're saying checks out. Cause I think like at DP, we're similar, right? It's like, our clients happy? Is our team happy? Like those, there's a bunch of KPIs, but at the end of the day, those are the two big ones that I kind of gravitate to. And for you, you've kind of scaled it to the point where the culture, I don't want to say it's self-sustaining because that's not, I don't think that actually is the case. You've worked hard to build what you have, but you have started attracting the right people now, right? You've gone from like, we need people, we need warm bodies to the right people find us, which is a really cool pivot.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And that was a hard road to kind of hoe, but we're getting there now to where, yeah, it's a flywheel that's kind of running, and a lot of time, energy, and effort spent on it early. And now we're just kind of maintaining it. And to your point, like the culture piece, like this whole place kind of takes on a personality or a life of its own. And early when we were smaller, you had to be real diligent to make sure you had the right people, that you didn't have any kind of bad attitudes, because that, you know, becomes a cancer and starts to spread. And now that culture is such that it's just flat moving and rolling, that if we get people in here, hopefully we've done a good enough job of kind of pre-screening, pre-qualifying, and making sure they're a cultural fit before. But let's say in the event that they're not, you know, this culture kind of has its own little thing going, that if they don't fit in, then the
group takes them out
itself, right?
Yeah. Are you a fan of Patrick Lencioni? Do you follow his stuff at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's like totally one of his things, like in The Advantage, is like this idea of, he calls it peer-to-peer accountability, but it's no longer hierarchical. You know, it's no longer like a boss or a manager or whatever, like firing people. It's the team. The team is repelling people who don't meet the team standard.
Yeah, 100% agree. And that's it's almost like we get people in here, and if they're a fit and it works, it's almost like they've been here for 6 months, 6 years. You know, they're just kind of, they just fit right in, and we're all off and running. And then you got the guys or girls that are just, if they're for Pascal, if they're what we call like I guys, like if it's for us, it's very much we. It's a team sport. We win together, we lose together. But if it's a bunch of I guys, or that's not my job, or any of those types of things, those they don't do too well here.
Right. There's a writer, Adam Grant, who would like call those guys takers.
Yep.
Right. Like it's what's in it for me. What's in it for me?
That's right. Give and take.
Yep. That's a great book. Great book. So this is great. So Bill, okay, how about this? Let's go down the culture road a little, because on one hand, I feel like it's a really overused word. I feel like people talk about it and don't know what the hell they're talking about. But I would also say it's a really important component. Two questions. One, when you think about culture, how do you think about it? How do you communicate it? How do you personally process it? And then two, how do you protect it?
Yeah. So the first one, I'm not entirely sure. I just think it's what you, it's your actions. It's what you do. It's how you carry yourselves. You know, as the leader of an organization, they're all looking to you, whether you know it or not. And, you know, how do you respond in times of crisis, or, you know, the way you carry yourself, the way you walk, talk, act. I mean, that's all part of the culture and what you deem acceptable. Like if you're freaking out about a situation, the whole place is going to freak out. And if you're calm, cool, and collected. So I think you just kind of set the tone early. And I don't know that culture is something that we go around talking about so much as it is that it just kind of is, right? You're in it every day. And I mean, I think that's just pretty much the culture, and it's how we carry ourselves and how we talk to customers, how we respond. And I think that all just kind of makes up the culture and, you know, how we protect it. So that's something that I'm fiercely protective of, because in the grand scheme of things, I think that is our only competitive advantage, truly, is just our people. You know, other companies in our market or other markets, like, they can go buy trucks or they can go buy this, and you can have a process here and there, but really what we do is not necessarily proprietary, it's customer service. And so I think our people and our culture, that's our most important thing that we have here. And yes, while we have gotten it to a certain point where it's kind of self-fulfilling, we still got to guard it, you know, intensely. So you get some people in here that don't fit the culture. If you don't take care of it, you know, in a timely manner, like I said, it kind of becomes a cancer and it spreads. And I've certainly made those mistakes through the years of, you know, having one or two bad apples, not taking care of it quickly enough. And then instead of getting rid of one or two, you got to get rid of three or five or however many.
Yeah, it's a more complicated problem. And not to loop back to Patrick Lencioni, but, you know, he's one of his quotes that he has that comes to mind right now is, if you have the right people, right? That's kind of all the context. If you have the right people and they're all rowing in the same direction, right? Which in and of itself is hard, that there's no industry that team could not dominate at any point in time against any competition in any market.
Yeah, totally agree. And I read quite a bit, and I didn't always used to like reading. But yeah, I think he was one of the first ones that I ever found, like a book of his probably 10, 15 years ago. I didn't even know like they wrote business books. I didn't even know that was a thing growing up. So yeah, I found one of his books, and I would say he's probably the guy, Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
That's the one.
Opened my whole world to like, hey, there's actually a bunch of really good material out there.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? Maybe for me, except I probably heard him speak before I read his books, because if anyone's never seen him speak, he's like very ADHD.
Okay.
It's like his brain's always on fire and he's just going 1,000 miles a minute. And there's something like captivating about hearing a mind like that just go crazy.
See, that's awesome. I'd love to see him. I've never, I've read, you know, probably three or four of his books. I think he's great, but I've never had the opportunity to see him. That's awesome.
Yeah. He's fascinating. So yeah, Five Dysfunctions. And then the more nerdy version of that same book is called The Advantage. It's like a little bit more academic. What in this transition, because in some ways, I mean, you might not agree with this. I'm curious your take. In some ways, the company that you acquired in 2012 and the company you now lead are not at all the same company. They share a name, but maybe that's about it. What has been some of the most surprising parts for you about the evolution of the business in that decade?
You know, I think humbling, probably the most humbling thing is, you know, I'm going to come in every day, I'm going to go to work, and I'm going to get after it. You know, that's the way I'm wired. That's what I'm going to do. But I'd say probably one of the most humbling things is to see, you know, like I said, say 200 people, like to see 199 other people to catch the same vision and to come here and work. And it's very humbling to, you know, it's a responsibility, it's a weight, but, you know, you have all of these people who have, you know, families or spouses or whatever. There's a lot of people that depend on what it is that we do. So I'd say it's just very humbling that all of those people see enough in what we're doing and the vision to jump on board and throw in their lot with us. And that I think is probably the most, weighty thing is just making sure we're making the right decisions for, you know, the hundreds of people that, you know, Pascal supports.
Right. So obviously you grew up in the trades, do you hold a license?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you are licensed. Got it. Because what was in hearing you talk about it, you know, a lot of guys like transition to owning a business because they're good at turning a wrench, like whatever their particular job is. Did you ever identify first as like an HVAC tech?
Nope. So I'm licensed. I'm licensed in Arkansas. I'm licensed in Oklahoma. I was turning a wrench just about as early as one could turn one. Right. So I grew up in the family business and, was remember my dad and his service van and dropping me off at school. And I was always in that environment. So I'm mechanically inclined, sure. But I can have a much greater impact, running the business, growing, scaling, finding teams, putting teams together. That's what I enjoy a little bit more than turning a wrench.
Yeah. And that seems like to be one of those keys of your success is that you, in the time that I've known you, you don't gravitate to like, put me in a van. I'm going to run these calls. Like that'd be ludicrous. I can't ever imagine you doing that. But I totally can imagine you attracting the right who's to help you do that.
Yeah, you probably don't want me fixing something. And again, I'm just looking at it from a business standpoint or a factory or whatever you want to call it. But if I'm out there turning a wrench while capable, that's not my best and highest use, right?
Right.
And we got a problem in the company if I'm the one doing, that's the way I look at it. So, my goal here is to make sure the place is running smoothly. And, if I constantly have a problem coming across my desk and it's the same problem, I view that as we have a problem in the factory somewhere. Like we need to make sure, because then at this point, like we're only as good, that's a bottleneck. And my whole job is to remove bottlenecks and make sure we're running just, as free and as easy as we can.
Yeah, I like the way you describe the business as a factory, right? It's like, it's a mechanical thing. It's not, you're not just responding to every crisis and every fire. Like it's a machine and the machine's got to run.
Yeah, it's 100%. Rightly or wrongly, that's kind of how we look at it is just a factory, a line. It's mechanical. And again, if I'm always dealing with the same problem, right, there's something at the factory level or the line level that's got to get fixed. To make sure, we're running like we should.
For you personally, how do you continue to feed yourself and develop your own skills that's helped you kind of take the business and its various iterations over time?
It's been a challenge. I mean, like I said earlier, I read often. I'm either in the business, working, growing, trying to figure out what's next or where the problems are. Kind of always just trying to push the place forward. And if I'm not doing that, I'm with kids or something family related, or I'm reading books or listening to podcasts or just trying to figure out what else is out there. So I would say personal development is definitely reading. I read a lot.
What's the last book you're in?
Actually right now I'm in the middle of Kissinger's book. So I do a bunch of biographies or, I really like those business books, psychology books, biographies and memoirs. So I kind of bounce around.
Good for you. Have you ever done anything like historical characters who are very influential?
Yeah. Like Churchill or.
Yeah. Churchill, Lincoln. Like there's a whole, just seeing how these like fascinating minds thought about things, surprising.
Yeah. So I think for me, I read a lot of those books. And when we look at them in like a historical context, it's easy to see Lincoln did this, Napoleon did this. But when you actually kind of like read the biographies and the memoirs, like you're there with them and you see what they were facing and the decisions that they had to make. And you really kind of get a newfound respect for them. And then when you're looking at it through the lens of like, here's just the little thing I have to do. Like Churchill put the whole world on his back. I mean, we're just running a little HVAC company. I'm sure we can do that.
Well, so you say that you kind of poo-poo HVAC. I feel like, again, I'm curious your thought on this. I feel like the whole, I'm going to say HVAC plumbing, but especially HVAC, it's like primed for disruption. There's a lot of moves with like PE coming in and gobbling up a lot of companies. There's companies like Tesla who are putting themselves into the conversation in the HVAC space. What's your thought on the state of the industry and kind of like what's your gut telling you about what the next 5-10 years looks like? What kind of, how do you think about that personally?
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. My family's company actually just went to private equity.
Oh, really? In Tulsa?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Well, yeah, so I think seismic shifts are not coming. They're already here. So I think we're in the middle of it. We ourselves are not going to go to private equity. I don't think that's the thing for us. I think in the private equity world, I think some of them, again, just my opinions, I think some of them are doing it well. Some of them not so much. I think we're kind of early on in how all that stuff's going to go. I think there's a lot of great companies, and some people are seeing crazy valuations and transactions are going nuts. And I think it's good for a lot of people that are looking to get out or retire. You know, I think that we're more concerned with making decisions for the next 10 to 20 years. And really, I mean, we're operators. So as we grow, we want to find a bunch of like-minded operators kind of as we expand, you know, say the Pasco brand. But yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting. I think some platforms, PE platforms, are doing it right. I think some not as much. You know,
some make me nervous. I got to be honest. Like,
yeah, you know. Yeah. I see crazy valuations. I see operators getting paid, and then I see those operators, which is the heart and soul of that company, leaving. And at the end of the day, you know, I get the financial engineering side. You can stack the companies. You can sell them. I think there'll be a bunch of private equity firms that will have successful exits. Now, I don't know what that means for the platforms kind of moving as they move forward. At the end of the day, I don't think you can take your eye off on the ball. Like it's all about the operators, right? And we have to take care of our customers. We have to take care of our employees. And I think in the midst of all of this, what I'm not hearing a bunch of is the operators that are actually running the businesses. That's my opinion. But I think we fundamentals, man, like fundamentals, you have to run the businesses.
I think you said that very well, very well. Okay. So with that in mind, I'm curious, what do you think, maybe as an industry, what do you think are some of the biggest risks that the industry faces in like the next 5 years?
Yeah. I mean, I think private equity is here. I think it's where everything's getting disrupted. And I think it's ripe for disruption. I think there's going to be winners. There's going to be losers. You know, I think the manufacturers, I certainly don't speak for them, but I think that a lot of them are trying to figure that out. So, yeah, it's just a bunch of changes coming down the line. Tesla, maybe there's something there. But, you know, I think that you still got to go into the homes. It's still mechanical, right? We still got to deal with Mrs. Smith. I don't see us getting disrupted on that side. Like we're customer service. It's capital intensive what we do. And we have to fix stuff, repair stuff, put new stuff in. So I think we're in a great business in that we're not going to get disrupted in that side. But I think we're in the middle of a monster disruption with consolidation and private equity and just
that whole thing. Yeah. So you think all the from an industry outside of the consolidation happening, you think from an industry, it's more like incremental changes we're facing. You don't think, for instance, potentially. So the weird seismic metaphor I always think of is like Henry Ford when he developed mass manufacturing of the automobile, it bankrupted everything involving horses. Yep. Like within a really short period of time, right? You can't really find anyone to make a buggy now. Good luck. Yeah. You don't think there's any sort of global technological pivot, any sort of like commoditization pivot that's happening in the industry? You think it's really just a matter of like incremental things that should be in people's radar?
Yeah, no, and I think we'll have changes certainly, and I think technology will change and get better, and we'll push that. I mean, maybe I'm naive, but I mean, I think people are still going to live in homes. And they're still going to need to be heated and cooled, right? And so will the technology change? Certainly, but not so much that it's like you go to wherever it is you buy stuff at that point and just plug something in and it just all works, right? So right. I think that it's still going to be mechanical, still going to break down. People still live in homes and they want to be comfortable. So as far as just HVAC is concerned, I think, yeah, I feel good about it. Same with plumbing, same with electrical.
This is going to sound like a curveball question. When you're not building this giant factory, what do you do for fun?
Build this giant factory?
You, Oh, okay.
That's all I do. No, man, it's I'm either here or, you know, I'm with the kids, just doing all that kind of stuff. I got two young kids and they're growing up. So really outside of that and just being around as a dad, just kind of doing the family thing, that's where I spend a lot of my time. One or two.
Do you still follow much collegiate sports like U of A baseball, for instance?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, where I live is we're right where the University of Arkansas is. So, you know, our basketball team's getting to be really good, which is nice. The baseball team's been good for a number of years. So, yeah, still follow the Razorbacks. Absolutely.
Any plans to adopt one of those stadiums?
As far as
you throw a giant Pascal logo on everything sports related.
Yeah, I've looked at it, but oddly enough, that stuff's not really cheap.
You don't say.
Super expensive. So we're just going to keep making Mr. and Ms. Smith happy and growing that way.
What is the thing, as you look back on the past like 10 years that you've been building Pascal, what's been some of the things that you find the most gratifying for you, that you're most proud of?
Great question. I mean, I would say just humbling that we got the people that we do have, you know, that they've seen that they bought into what we're doing. Most gratifying is like when we see our people win, you know, sometimes this industry, like, you know, sometimes our people, like this industry chose them. They didn't necessarily choose the industry, right? You know, like maybe they started out in HVAC or plumbing because they didn't have a choice or whatever it is. And so, you know, growing up, I was fortunate enough with good family and team sports or what have you. Like, I know what it takes to be successful and how to put in the work. And when I can see our people be successful, like that's super, super, like that will tug at the heartstrings when you're seeing some of your people, whether it be get out of debt or buy a house for the first time, or maybe they get to go on their first vacation or buy an apartment or buy a car. Like when I see our people win, I get choked up just thinking about it, but I get super pumped and excited when I get to see our people win. And, you know, sometimes they're people that, you know, you're truly able to change people's lives.
Right.
And it's really, really cool to see our people win.
I love what you said there. And I feel like that's perfectly encapsulates what Pascal is about. It's just helping people win. Internal customers, external customers, like you guys are very selfless, very supporting. I don't want to say brand because then it sounds cold. Community, right? Like you guys do that. If somebody's listening to this right now and maybe they're like mesmerized by your story, they feel frustrated with where they are, they see what you were able to see in Pascal, but maybe they're struggling to put some of those pieces in place. Are there two or three things that you would tell somebody of like, think about it this way, help do these things? Like what three things would you tell somebody who's looking at what you're doing with a lot of respect?
Yeah. So, again, I read a bunch of books. That's very helpful for me. Reach out, ask questions, you know, find myself or find somebody. You know, what is that? It's like a smart man learns from his mistakes. A wise man learns from the mistakes of others.
Totally. So
there's a bunch of others, you know, presumably if I'm at a roadblock, what I try to do is zoom out and just kind of look at this challenge and who's already faced this, who's already dealt with this. And maybe, you know, somebody that you could reach out and really just kind of that peer group and network and just trying to reach out and figure out, hey, I'm at this hurdle. How do I get over it? What did you do? And more than likely they'll tell you what worked for them, but they'll also tell you the two or three things you shouldn't do. Maybe they can kind of save you some time.
I think that is awesome. So if somebody wants to like reach out to you, are you cool? Like if somebody wants to ask you questions, how would they reach you?
Absolutely. They can reach me by email and it's CBOYCE. So cboyce@gopascal.com. Or I'm on LinkedIn, you know, Charlie Boyce, CHARLEY. So yeah, whatever. I mean, call the office, Pascal, as for me. Just happy to help whoever I can for sure.
I know you're crazy busy. I'm super grateful you took the time to hop on here. Before you go, can I ask you just a couple random questions that have nothing to do with anything?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. All right, here we go. Let's start easy. How do you take your coffee?
Black.
Black. Do you drink like Onyx coffee? Is that your thing?
Yeah. Onyx is good. There's another place here called Seven Brew. But yeah, just dark roast black. Simple, clean, easy.
There we go. Favorite pizza topping?
Either Meat Lovers or I know this is kind of out there, like Hawaiian, Canadian bacon and pineapple.
Oh, yeah.
Like some people think pineapple does not belong on pizza. I'm for it. I'm in pineapple's camp.
Okay. But do you put jalapenos on that pizza?
Yeah. Not all the time, but I certainly will. Yeah.
You should totally do it more often.
Hey, I'll tell you what, here's a good one. I found this the other day, Mike's Hot Honey. Have you ever had that?
Oh my gosh. That is my default jam. I'm drinking hot tea right now. It's in here.
Yeah. Mike's Love Hot it. Honey. I found that the other day on pizza. That's kind of my new thing is Mike's Hot Honey.
Mike's Hot Honey on pizza. I've had it on salads. I put it in tea. I love that stuff, man.
All right. Yeah. Good. This is good.
Love it. Yeah. For those who don't know, it's like a chili infused honey. And so it's got this nice, like, I don't know what to describe the type of pepper, but it's a nice lingering heat.
Yes, it's phenomenal. I just found that. So I've been dominating that on some pizza.
Ooh, another thing. Sorry, way chasing rabbits now. Grilling pineapple that's marinated in Mike's hot honey. Like all marinate the pineapple and throw it on the grill like a smoker if you have one. Oh, bro.
All right, bro. Good.
Good stuff.
I got my weekend now.
Yes. If you were stuck on a desert island and you could only take three things with you for the rest of your life, what are those three things?
Great question. I mean, probably a way to start fire, probably a way to make fresh water. So those two things for sure. And then something kind of out there, maybe to help pass the time, maybe like a solar powered way to read books or something. So I'm not reading the same ones.
Oh, like a solar powered Kindle. That's clever.
Yeah. But then it's like, well, if you got that, you're downloading books. So if you're doing that, you could probably reach out for help. So that might not be the best thing.
I think you're thinking too much into this random thought exercise. Like, I don't think it's actually like, how would you reach for help if you were stuck? I think you just took it where it wasn't supposed to go.
Yeah. That's like me. I'm sorry.
You made a perfectly fun thing, not fun anymore.
Yeah. I'm thinking through it, like logically how it would actually work, but yeah.
Charlie, man, it's good to see you, man. Thank you for taking the time. It's always good to talk to you. So yeah, guys, check him out. GoPascal. They do really, really amazing work. So cboyce at gopascal.com and he's everywhere on LinkedIn. Charlie, bud, you're amazing. Thanks for taking the time.
Ryan, thanks for having me, man. Really do appreciate it.
This is fun. See ya.
This episode was hosted by Ryan Redding, author of the book on digital marketing for plumbing and HVAC contractors. This show also includes much help from Shelby Nichols. You can subscribe to Blue Collar CEO on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at bluecollar.ceo and find us on Instagram. Also, don't forget to subscribe and leave a review.